couple common threats that I'll often see in couples. One is the fact that we're all selfish. Every single one of us. James 4:1 says the reason that we fight and quarrel is not because of the kids, it's not because of money, it's not because of in-laws, as hard as those things might be. And we happen to have great in-laws, Chris, of course.
Amen.
It's not those things. Those things can be an issue. The biggest reason we fight is because we're selfish. And so we've got to deal with our selfishness. The good thing is we follow a selfless God. And so we have the perfect example to follow there.
Welcome to the Lead Like Jesus podcast. This is Karen Conley, and I'm with two incredible men. The first one is my husband, Chris Conley, the trustee for Lead Like Jesus. We have the privilege today doing part two with Scott Kadersha from Watermark Church. Scott, we are so glad to have you back today.
It's good to be here with you, sister-in-law and brother-in-law.
Yeah.
We threw my parents for a major loop early in life, about 20-plus years ago, when I ended up marrying Chris, who was called to the ministry, I guess, a year or so before we were married. And then who would have known that my sister, a physical therapist, ended up dating a physical therapist that was then called to the ministry. So I have a husband and a brother-in-law that are both in full-time ministry. It is so great that we were able to get you to share talking about pre-marriage and newly married stage of life. And this podcast, we are so excited because there are so many people that they've been doing this marriage thing for a while now, and they don't really fit into that category. But they need to know how important it is to prioritize their marriage and to help normalize the fact that there are bumps along the way that can be helped. So we're excited to talk to you about that today as we do part two, Scott.
So, Scott, we're going to talk about marriage development. And then we're also going to talk about that there are times that life throws us a curveball and our marriage needs some repair. As we talk about marriage development, I'll be married to this incredible woman for 22 years this Friday. It has been amazing, but I am confident that there are times along the way she would want me to prioritize a little bit more development. That's perfectly normal. Whether you've been married 5 years, 10 years, 20 plus years, talk to us a little bit about the priority of always investing in your marriage. What are some of the things that you have learned through the ministry, some of the things that you do specifically at Watermark Church, helping people strengthen their marriage along the way?
Yep, a couple of things in that. The first part I shared about a little framework that we do at Watermark Community Church when it comes to relationships. We talk about preparing newlyweds. And so couples that are seriously dating and engaged, how do we help them prepare for the decision to say I do? We establish newlyweds where we take newly married couples. We put them in a small group, community group with a married mentor and help them build their marriage on the solid rock foundation of Christ. And the last two things that we do when it comes to marriage is that we want to enrich and restore all marriages. So the restore piece is that crisis piece we'll talk about in the second half of this podcast. But for the next few minutes, let's just talk about the enrichment side of it. Every one of us needs to be intentional in growing in our marriage. It's not going to happen like my kids. I've got four boys. If we feed them and, you know, and give them some sunlight and water, they're going to grow and they're going to develop. The same thing doesn't happen with marriage. If you just let it sit there on its own, it's not going to grow or develop in the way that we want it to. And so instead, we've got to take intentional steps or intentional efforts. And that's whether we're in crisis, whether we're newlyweds. It doesn't matter where we fall. We've got to make some efforts to grow our marriage so that we don't end up either, one, getting divorced, or potentially even worse in some ways, is staying married and just being miserable together for 50 or 60 years.
As the woman, for me, one of the things that has been so important in our marriage, Chris and I keep our worlds connected. We have the fortune at this stage of life to both do ministry together. And I understand that is not the norm. But there were many years where we had two children pretty close together, and my world was changing diapers and wiping noses. And I had the opportunity that we could have become very disconnected. Chris was doing his thing. He was building an organization. He was working lots of hours. And I was trying to survive at home with two children and to navigate that new stage of life. What are those things you do along the way to keep that cohesiveness going?
Sometimes what I hear from couples, they just need to get to that annual retreat where they get away together so they can work on their marriage. Those are great. I'm all for annual retreats and conferences, but if you just try to fit all of your marriage work into 36 hours away or 1 week away together a year, and you neglect it the other 52 weeks or the other hours of the year, you're going to end up in that ditch or in that pit. So much of what I encourage couples to do is just in the small day by day, moment by moment. It's when we do things like Philippians 2, 3, and 4, when we put the needs of our significant other, our spouse, before our own. It's when we do what Jesus says in Mark 10, 44 and 45, where we follow the example of Jesus and we serve our significant other. It's the daily things like communication. Like, I don't just talk to Kristen one time a week. We talk throughout the day. We text one another. We communicate over the phone when I'm at work. We spend time catching up every single day. We set in a very intentional time. In fact, I've said before, the most important thing we do in our marriage, every Sunday night, we sit down together for 45 minutes with our calendar, with the schedule for the week, and just make sure that we're on the same page for the other 7 days and 23 hours of the week. Being intentional about our time together on a moment-by-moment basis, but also in these times when we're intentional about catching up on our schedule, making sure we're on the same page.
Okay, it's okay for you to give marriage advice as long as that advice doesn't get me in trouble.
That's right.
My spouse would love that 45-minute conversation each week to plan it out. So that is great, great advice. I think I might have just acquired a new appointment on my schedule.
There you go. I was going to say, you and I do great. We connect and talk every day. And that, to me, has been the key for us. As I lead a women's ministry, I am always encouraging the women that I lead, you need to be involved and know about your husband's life at work and what he does professionally. That part we have always stayed connected on. And whether your husband is a scientist or a school teacher or whatever he might be, a CEO, for you as a wife, that's where so much of his time and energy is spent. So you want to know, what are the highs and lows? What are the stresses and struggles? So that when things don't go right at work for him, when things are tough for Chris at work, if I have had that consistent conversation every night, when he calls and says, I've got a meeting, I'm not going to be home for dinner, my reaction is not, are you kidding me? The kids are hungry and we're waiting and where are you? And one more night without you, which fortunately is not our case. That could be a woman's response if she's not knowing, I know that that's been a trouble spot. I know that he's concerned about this. I know this is weighing on him. Honey, I get it. I'm going to be praying for you. I'll keep something warm for you, or you can zap it when you get home. But there's not this resentment because we have stayed connected. Now, I do like the calendar. We don't necessarily look at 7 days in a row, which would probably be good.
It's so helpful. And we're intentional about that time to make sure we're on the same page, that we know what the kids are doing and where we need to be. And then we also recommend just go on a date night with each other. We're in the stage of life now where all of our kids are in school. And so sometimes the date night looks like a lunch together on a Wednesday afternoon at lunch. We try to date each other. And so we're very intentional about being creative about the way that we pursue each other. So every couple should find some way to make sure that you're doing things together. Now, sometimes a date night might be going to shop at Home Depot together. It looks different for every different stage of life you're in. It's harder when you got young kids. Becomes expensive, and so you might find another couple to do a date night swap with so that they come watch your kids for free, you watch their kids for free. You're spending money on a babysitter, that's $40-$50 right there potentially, and so find another family with kids a similar stage of life so that you can swap kids just for a night, not permanently, although I might like to do that sometimes. So be creative in your dates. Don't go out to dinner and a movie every time. Movies are great, and I love going to them, but that's on a date night. I'm not intentionally engaging and pursuing my spouse at a movie date night. And so do those sometimes, but be creative. I post on my blog. I'll tell you more about that later. But scottkadersha.com/date night. I put together a list of 124 killer date night ideas. Those are for the Dallas area where I live. But so much of that applies for couples anywhere. And so check that out just to give you some creative ideas on how to be intentional and creative in the way you pursue your spouse.
I love that. And for us, it has always been a challenge to get away for a vacation. And one of our children is in public school and one is in private. And you can watch some families that have money to go away every spring break and fall break. And with kids, you always tend to put that priority of, okay, we're going to spend the money to do something. If we have the money at all, we're going to scrape it together and use it for our kids. But it is important to invest invest in time away as a couple. Even if you borrow someone's house that's out of town for the week and it's a staycation, but you have some time away. We always talk about it's a family adventure when the kids are with us. It is a vacation when we are by ourselves.
Scott, one of the things you mentioned just a moment ago was stages of life. We're talking about marriage development. Let's say that we're moving from that 20-something stage of life into the 30-something where there's a lot of demand upon us. We're building our careers. Busyness is probably hitting an all-time high. If you have children, they're in a stage of busyness of probably starting school and things like that. Busyness is the enemy of intimacy. So when we're in those stages of life where we have maximum busyness, what can we do to counteract that busyness and prioritize still having time in the midst of that busyness and still having intimacy?
It's great. One thing I struggle with, I'm a people pleaser, so I have trouble saying no. If somebody provides me an opportunity, if they ask me to meet with them, if I get an opportunity outside of town, I don't want to say no to anything. A role that my wife has played and my community group has played, we're in a small group with four other couples. We run opportunities by them so they can speak into our busyness. Part of the reason why we're so busy, yes, it's the kids, yes, it's job, yes, it's other commitments, but the biggest reason that Scott and Kristen Kadersha are busy is because of Scott. It's because of the decisions I make. That might be the same for you. So the first thing you need to do is to say, why are we so busy? What's contributed to that? What can we get rid of? What are the things in our life that we're doing because we either feel pressured into it because we don't want to disappoint or let someone else down? So one is just figure out what those things are that you can get rid of. Second is just the role that our friends have played in helping us make decisions about our schedule. Third, I would say, is just what I would take advantage of whatever opportunity you have. And so this is a high priority. If you think making money and providing for your family and getting the next big deal is a higher priority so that you can do things down the road, that's great, except you might be losing your marriage or your kids right now. And so I'd be really discerning on the decisions that you're making, and I prioritize your walk with Jesus, your relationship with your spouse, your relationship with your kids.
One of the things I've noticed, and I'd love your insight on this, if we're not careful, I've oftentimes noticed that during our 30s, we're building those careers, and probably more times than not, it's two people building their career. It's not a stay-at-home mom oftentimes. Then what happens is during our 30s, we lose our marriage and we kind of become a partnership. We're more like the Conley or the Kardashia family partnership. We're coexisting versus growing in relationship. And then I find that that's oftentimes the reason why a lot of people get divorced in their 40s is that when their kids get out of school, they look at one another and they've forgotten that they even had a marriage because they just were parents.
Chris and I went on a date night a couple of years ago, and a couple of minutes into the date night, after talking about the kids for 15, 20 minutes and then talking about my job for 15 or 20 minutes, I just sat there and this has got to stop. Like, we've got to stop revolving all of our conversations around the kids and around work. We've got to be intentional about pursuing each other. What's going on spiritually? What's the Lord teaching you? What are you struggling with right now? How can I pray for you? Not that kids and job are not important, but our relationship as husband and wife has got to be about so much more than just our kids and just our jobs. To being intentional about the conversations that you have so that you don't just drift into talking about those things. I think about work a lot, probably way too much. I know it's a tendency for a lot of guys, for a lot of wives as well, and it's the same with our kids. I'm looking at the clock now, and my time with my kids is drifting away, and so I don't want to neglect that time, but I know that I'm going to be with my wife for another 40, 50 years, however many years he gives us together. And so we've got to be intentional about building our marriage, not just focusing around our jobs and our kids.
Scott, we would be naive to think that there are not a lot of couples listening to this, man or woman, that have a pretty good amount of water under the bridge. There's been some seasons where one or two of them have not focused on marriage, or maybe this is just unintentionally, they haven't made that investment. And so now they do look at each other and think, gosh, you know, I don't know if I want to work at this or not. If they've had divorce in their family, I think maybe this is the direction we're headed as well. One of the things that I think is so important, if you're in that position, to realize sometimes we won't do it for ourselves, but we might do it for our children. And instead of thinking that the answer is to invest in your children, that that's the way to help them, to realize maybe the best investment that you can make is your marriage? For us, with our teenagers, one of ours the other day, his six closest friends, five of them are without dads, one by death and four by divorce. It radically affects those young men, and it affects my son and the homes that he is in. So speak to that man who's weary from work and tired and is just hanging in there providing for his kids about why he might need to go beyond that, not just for his sake, not just for his wife's sake, because maybe at some point that has lost its urgency. Why, for the sake of the kids, is it not just enough to stay together, that there's another step that God would want him to take?
One question I often ask myself, what is the one small thing I could do today that would make a difference? I don't need to fix my whole world overnight or in a week or a month. I can just say, what's the next step of faithfulness for me, for my marriage, for my walk with Jesus, with my kids? And so do that one thing. The second thing I think of is the words that we say are significant and important. So when a husband and wife took their marriage vows with one another, they said that they would be with each other for better or worse, and richer or poorer, sickness and in health. One of the phrases that we use is to love and to cherish. And we often think about love. You know, what does love look like? What does it mean? I just read an outstanding book. It's by Gary Thomas. It's called Cherish. And the book Cherish is about something that we often don't do for our spouse. We do not cherish, nourish, or value them. What I loved about this book, it was a kick in the butt for me. Chris and I have a great marriage. Most days we do really well, but one thing I've noticed, we've fallen into some of those patterns and ruts where I do not cherish my wife. I don't hold her dear. I don't make the extra effort to study her and to value her, to make her known just how much I love her, how much God loves her, how valuable she is. And so reading that book in the last couple of weeks has been so good for me to realize that I've got to grow in the way that I cherish my spouse.
Scott, we've been talking about marriage development. One of the things that I've noticed in this progression of our conversation is it's almost impossible to talk about marriage development without talking about the obstacles that you face along the way. We're going to shift the conversation a little bit where we can spend the remainder of this podcast talking about what do we need to do at times when we run into crisis? What do we need to do when our marriage needs a season of rebuilding, a season of healing, a season of repair? What would you say are some of the most common threats to the health of one's marriage that you've encountered? There are these predictable threats that occur along the way that can really sidetrack our marriages.
A couple common threats that I'll often see in couples. One is the fact that we're all selfish. Every single one of us, James 4:1 says the reason that we fight and quarrel is not because of the kids, it's not because of money, it's not because of in-laws, as hard as those things might be. And we happen to have great in-laws, Chris, of course.
Amen.
It's not those things. Those things can be an issue. The biggest reason we fight is because we're selfish. And so we've got to deal with our selfishness. The good thing is we follow a selfless God. And so we have the perfect example to follow there. Second, the fear of intimacy. I don't mean sexual intimacy. I mean intimacy that I don't want you to see how messed up I am. So if you are one flesh with someone in marriage, if you are not fully transparent and open and honest with them, then you're giving them half of yourself, or you're just giving them a part of yourself. You want to be real and be honest and keep it real with your spouse. And so you can't fear being intimate. Adam and Eve in the garden in Genesis 2:24-25. It says, the man shall leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, the two become one flesh. And then verse 25 says, the man and woman were together and they were naked and there was no shame. God's pattern, his hope and desire for us in marriage is that we would not be afraid of being naked physically and emotionally with our spouse, and that we're intended to not be shameful or filled with shame with our spouse. We are lazy. We tend to be apathetic. We don't have good models of what marriage looks like. And so those are other threads as well, as we just kind of give up or get lazy or excuse it because we don't know what it's supposed to look like.
When these threats come along, one of us in the relationship is beginning to sense that there's tension. And we think this is a small problem, or this is a medium-sized problem, or this problem's getting a little bit out of hand. It's really beginning to worry me. At what point would you say that people should kind of call time out and go, whoa, let's not call this a small problem. Let's go ahead and get help. And as we talk about that, Take us into a little bit of the re-engage ministry that Watermark has created and that so many other churches are following suit with, and our church does re-engage. It's been phenomenal. Walk us down that road of when we should go, whoa, time out, let's get help, and let's not be afraid that we need to ask for help. Asking for help is a healthy thing. Not asking for help is actually a weakness.
James 4:6, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. So for that reason, we've got to be people who are humble. So when there's an issue in our marriage, when our spouse sees it, when someone else sees it, just being teachable and open to admitting that we need some help. And so part of what I think we need to do as a nation, as people who follow the Lord even, is just to say, we've got trouble, we need help. And that doesn't mean we're strange, it doesn't mean we're abnormal, we're broken, we're all broken. So the first step is just admitting that we've got a problem and we need to invite somebody else in. About 10 years ago, 8 years ago, as a church, my boss and a few others on our team said, we've got to find a way to help couples who are struggling in their marriage. We don't want to push them away from the church. We think the church should be the place where couples can come to get help and healing. And so we started a ministry that was, in many ways, it's modeled after like a Celebrate Recovery model, where there's large group time together with teaching and testimony and worship. And then you break into small groups and you work through, in Celebrate Recovery, you work through your addictions and habits, and re-engage, you work through your marriage issues in the context of community, with God's word, with godly people. And it provides an incredibly safe place for couples to come to find hope and healing within the local church.
Time and time again, we hear a couple who were reluctant to walk into that environment, that they felt like they weren't those kind of people. They didn't fit there. Or we are struggling, but man, we're not going to open up and share that with anybody else. And I would just encourage you, if that's you and you've kind of got that, yeah, that's nice for somebody else, but we're not quite to that place yet. Almost without exception, what we hear is they come in and they hear that testimony and they hear someone being honest and vulnerable, realize I'm not alone. Other people struggle with this and other people have overcome this. Man, you might not be willing to talk right now, but if you are listening to this and your marriage fits into that category of, you know, we've been trying to define it as a small problem for a long time now, and maybe we just need to get honest and get some help, I would encourage you to find a re-engage near you. Even though you might not think you belong there, just give it one try. Just give it one try.
So as a team a couple of years ago, when we tried to figure out how do we make this thing available to other churches, we just said we need to provide a place. And you just said it, Karen, where couples can get help in their marriage. And so we happened upon the website marriagehelp.org. Very easy to remember. And so marriagehelp.org is kind of the homepage. It's the site for our re-engage ministry. One of the things that you can do on there, there's a church locator on there. You put your zip code in, and it will tell you what churches near you have a re-engage. What is great about re-engage, so many things are great about it, but as you said, Karen, it's that safe place where you can walk in and say, I'm not alone, I'm not the only one who's struggling. You follow the example and leadership of others who have gone before you, who have admitted that they have a problem and need some help, and so you're not the first, you won't be the last, but it provides a place where you can find the hope of Christ for your marriage when you feel like all things are lost.
Scott, what I have seen through our experience with re-engage, re-engage is, in my opinion, so much more effective than just Karen and I sitting down one-on-one doing marriage counseling. What are the reasons, from your perspective, why re-engage is even more effective than counseling?
Part of it is, so if a couple were to come in and say, I want to meet with Chris and Karen Conley, 22 years, they've got it all together, he's a pastor in the church, she leads women's ministry. This couple is like the perfect couple. We know you're not. You're close to it, as close to anyone I know. You've got a great marriage, but you're on this level that is almost so hard to attain to. Whereas when you go to something like re-engage, you're in a room with another couple who has had an affair. You're with several other couples who've had affairs. You're led by someone who's had a broken marriage in many ways, and they admit it themselves. And so there's this level and power of community, of realizing you're not the first, you're not the last, you're in a really safe place with others who have walked the same road with you. as someone who works in ministry, Chris, you and I, knowing that we can't meet with every couple that wants to meet. And so Reengage has provided a great place for couples to come within the context of community to get some help and to grow. You know, what I've seen over my life and the way that God chooses to work is that he works through his people. He doesn't work just through pastors. He works through the local body of Christ. You and I have the same Bible. You know, we have everything we need for life and godliness. That's what Peter says in 2 Peter. And so anyone that thinks, man, I've got to go to the professional to get help, the professional has the same Bible that the small group leader in Reengage does. And so you can find hope and healing in the local church through God's word, through his spirit, and through his people.
There's going to be some people listening to this podcast, and they think it's over. They think, I don't know that it's worth the work and the effort. I don't know that I can care enough. I don't know that I can love enough. I don't know that I can do enough to repair my marriage, to recover my marriage. As someone who has experienced divorce through my parents and have seen the consequences of divorce and stuff, there's a fallacy in our thinking out there. Sometimes people think, oh, well, it's easier to start over than it is to repair. What would you say to that person who feels like quitting right now? What would you say to them about not quitting and what they can do to really rescue their marriage?
What I wish I could do right now, Chris, is parade the hundreds of couples in this room right now to get in front of this microphone and share their stories. I'd divide them into two. I'd give a room full of couples who gave up on their marriage and whose kids grew up in homes that are broken, and I'd let you listen to their testimony, and I'd tell you to ask them if it's worth it. And then I'd put you in a room with another set of couples who fought through it, whose kids are growing up in a home where mom and dad didn't give up, where mom and dad are still married. And is it easy all the time? No. But I'd let you listen to their testimony of God's people who pushed through. And I want you to sit with their kids, and I want you to hear the stories of their kids. You say, it's worth it. I'm so thankful. I think of one of my closest friends, my hero of the faith, is a guy named Kyle. I think of his marriage to Lucina, and I think about how they almost gave up 25 years ago. Instead, now what I see is a guy who's an elder in our church, a guy who's had the greatest impact in my life spiritually out of anyone else, a guy I look up to. He's not perfect, but I look at him and I'm so thankful that he didn't give up. And I'd put his kids in front of you, and I want you to hear from his kids, and I want you to see the legacy he's left behind because he worked on his marriage and he didn't give up even though he wanted to.
Scott, I couldn't agree with you more. When you see what God can do, and it's okay to say, I don't have it in me. If you look at it and you think, oh, gosh, it's been years since it's been what I want it to be, don't worry about the years behind you. Just worry about today. You can make a good choice today. And so, Scott, maybe one more time as we wrap up this broadcast, we would encourage every single person to go to Watermark's landing page. If you'd give us that website one more time.
So I'll give you a couple of them. So our church's website is watermark.org. That's for Watermark Community Church in Dallas, Texas. Marriagehelp.org is the landing page for Reengage. That's where you can put in the zip code and find a Reengage near you. If you're in Memphis, go to High Point. If you're in Dallas, come to Watermark. But go to that webpage. You can find churches across the country that offer Reengage. If you are interested in potentially offering Reengage and finding out more about it for your local church, go to dfwmarriage.org, Dallas-Fort Worth, dfwmarriage.org. One of the things you'll see on there, there's a button for something called the Marriage Ministry Training Conference, where you come hang out with us for a couple of days in Dallas. We'll tell you about everything we do for pre-marriage, newly marriage, enrichment, and restoration. You can find out how to get re-engaged in your local church wherever you live.
Thank you so much for coming and joining us, and I hope that that has given hope to many people out there listening. And if you are blessed with a godly marriage and you have put that work in, I also encourage you to get to your local church and make yourself available. If you've had a struggle and you've overcome it, you are probably the perfect candidate to be a mentor couple in something like a Reengage. And we hear time and time again from other couples that their marriages are sweeter than they ever thought they could be. And now God is actually using what was broken in them before and what he has healed to help other couples. If you want more information on leadership development training and resources, visit us at leadlikejesus.com.